south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. When you're finally living down here in Latin America as an expat, every once in a while, after your Spanish gets halfway decent, after you hit maybe a 6 or 7 out of 10, when you actually start picking out words and phrases from people walking down the street, in elevators, and sitting in cafes and bus stops and things, soon enough, after you catch on, you start to realize that Latin Americans are just full of superstitions. And I guess it comes from the fact that there are more than 300 indigenous tribes in Latin America, and each of them was isolated for a long, long time and developed their own sets of superstitions. And now that the world is connected and modernized, and these tribes have been pulled, dragging, and screaming into the 20th century. You know what I said? 20th century here, not the 21st. That'll take some time yet. That said, all those various tribal superstitions are now being mished and mashed together. None of them falling by the wayside and new ones appearing every day. And even more so now that we've got Halloween here in Latin America. Now, I know this show is coming about 2 weeks after Halloween, but note, only in the past maybe 3 or 4 years has Halloween hit Latin America in a big way. I'm telling you, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, there never was the coverage, the media, the decorations, or the buildup. But now you see all the local newscasters and the weather people and the sports guys all dressed up in costume doing their spiel on TV. And a few years ago, you never saw that. Anyway, that said, again, it's all about the fact that everything gringo is cool. So, then do Latin kids go trick-or-treating? Yes, in protected neighborhoods, guarded subdivisions and such. Even in the lower middle class and poor neighborhoods, kids will dress up and go to certain neighbors' houses with their parents tagging along. But you'll find ads for candy and treats and stuff. You'll only find that folks in the upper middle class and wealthy neighborhoods actually give out the usual candy treats. I understand that in middle class neighborhoods, a lot of times the kids will show up at the door, everyone will smile and laugh and throw out a few compliments, yet the people answering the door will not hand out any treats because they don't know the full extent of the tradition. They know people dress up that day, etc. But the old North American trick-or-treat cliche is not well understood down here, so when you're driving through neighborhoods, you'll see no soaped windows or toilet-papered trees or raw eggs splattered on someone's front door. There's none of that going on because the concept of the trick-or-treat hasn't quite been disseminated down here yet. So again, there's that first world lag time. But I suppose in a couple of years, the day after Halloween, you will start seeing some remnants of the tricks when there were no treats. Oh, and by the way, Expat Eddie and I were going to hit the Halloween party scene as Mormons, but it'll have to wait till next year because Eddie had a little bit of a domestic emergency this last week. Seems the day before Halloween, he woke up and walked out to his backyard. He noticed there wasn't any water at all in his pool. Turns out it developed a fatal crack overnight. And at first he was quick to blame the contractor who put the thing in about 3 or 4 years ago. But after talking to his gardener and maintenance man and a few people in the neighborhood, he realized it's because of those repeated tiny little earthquakes, most of which you never even feel. So know that the subsurface in Latin America is always shifting slightly, little by little. And eventually you start seeing the effects. So if you have a swimming pool down here, do keep an eye on it. Do drain the water and do an inspection a couple times a year. Remember, most backyard pools contain 20,000 gallons of water or more. That's 70 to 100 tons sloshing around day and night. And because most of Latin America is seismically active, pools are subject to hairline cracks and fissures that you see in most buildings down here too. Like I said in past shows, I've built about 13 plus structures down here, houses and office buildings, etc. And I have to say, after a few years, every last one of them has developed a crack or two here or there. Usually very fine hairline cracks, but it's always due to these tiny little earthquakes that are always going on. In fact, I've spoken to an expat gringo friend of mine who has been down here a long time, a geologist. And he said, If you were to look at a seismograph that's continuously recording, you'd be shocked to see that on a usual day, there could be up to 100 tiny earthquakes at any particular spot in Latin America. And that's not just 100 little earthquakes throughout Latin America, that's in one particular spot. For example, a spot like Managua, Nicaragua. On any given day, there are hundreds of tremors there, mostly under 2 on the Richter scale. And note, basically, only 1 in about 100 people can faintly detect a 2-point tremor on the Richter scale. And almost no one can detect a 1-point or less, unless you're a shaman or a dolphin or a dog. And occasionally, every month or so, I'll notice myself what turns out to be a 3 or a 3.5 on the Richter scale. It's just enough so that you slightly feel it or think you feel it, and you question it later and say, hey, wait a minute. Was that a tremor or just too much espresso? Then you check the paper or the internet next day to figure out if it was a tiny one in your neighborhood or a big one in someone else's 400 miles away. Anyway, you get enough of those small 1- and 2-pointers over the years. Most concrete buildings develop little hairline cracks in them. Now, I'm not saying every concrete or concrete block wall is going to develop hairline cracks, but I've yet to see a concrete structure in Latin America that doesn't have a few here and there. And most often you see them show up in joint seams or somewhere on a ceiling. And usually they're so fine that even a coat of paint will cover them up nicely. Then, of course, after a while, they'll open up slightly again. But remember, I'm talking about hairline cracks, so small that you can't really see them till you get up close. Nothing to worry about, though, except, like I said, if you've got a built-in swimming pool like expat Eddie has. Like I said, in his case, he woke up the day before Halloween and voila, no water in the pool. And no one had pulled the drain plug. And then, of course, upon inspection, he noticed a crack about 3/4 of an inch wide along the bottom and halfway up the side. So naturally, Eddie called the pool guy, and his crew came rambling in about 4 hours later. They chipped away at the edges of the crack, took a few measurements, and came up with a figure of around $1,500 US to repair the thing. Now, of course, Eddie was figuring on a price of maybe $200 or $300 because all you do is dig out around the crack and reinforce it and repaint it. That's how he figured he would have done it. That is, until the main guy in charge of his boys said to Eddie, "Your pool was filled a couple days ago, right? And now it's empty. Where do you think that 20,000 gallons of water went? There's some kind of fissure or void or airspace in your backyard somewhere. We got to find it and fill it. Or your pool will keep shifting and it'll happen again." So anyway, get this. The next day, Halloween, 4 guys came over with pickaxe and shovels, pretty much slicing his pool in half. Then they dug around the crack for about 4 days, did all the new fill work and concrete repairs, and they'll be back again in a couple weeks after the concrete cures to put the final outer finish on it. So think about it. There were 4 men on the job, 8 hours a day for 4 days, digging up pretty much his whole backyard. In the end, the workers put in about 150 man hours. Like I said, the total cost of the project is about $1,500 US, with $600 of that being the material cost, the concrete, etc. That means the total labor cost was $900. So then dividing $900 by 150 man hours, Eddie was paying those workers a whopping $6 an hour. Which seems an awful lot, since down here the average unskilled grunt worker gets about $1.50 an hour. Now, the pool company is only paying the workers the normal, slightly over minimum wage, about $1.50 an hour, which means the pool company made off with about $675 profit. Now, if that seems high to you, considering it's Latin America, think about this. Eddie did check prices up in the States, and he was quoted for a similar job up there, between $6,000 and $10,000. Remember, Eddie's cost here was $1,500. But back to the main point about these tiny earthquakes that are happening all the time. Tremors, or as they call them in Spanish here, temblores. Now, just to set your mind at ease a bit, when you do see on the news, and maybe even in person, a building that's crumbled because of an earthquake, note that nearly in every case, it's because the building hasn't been built to earthquake standards. Or it's an older adobe-style building, or it's a building that has been built to proper seismic standards, except it's on the side of a mountain or a hill in a precarious position. Because, remember, there is no such commission or review board that's going to stop you from building your house on the side of a mountain or on a precarious ledge. Because you see, once you have your building plans approved by a registered architect in the country that you're building, that's it. You pay for your permit and you're off to the races. And that's why you see houses, occasionally million-dollar houses, sliding off hills and falling off cliffs. So, in effect, you can build in a floodplain or on the edge of a cliff. It doesn't matter. So, in effect, you can be a careless, moronic idiot, and no one will stop you, as long as you own the property. And you know that up in the States, insurance companies won't insure you if you build in a floodplain, for example. Not a problem down here. People don't get homeowners insurance, remember? But also note that 9 out of 10 times when you see a house fall off a cliff, for example, it's not from those multiple tiny earthquakes. It's because of the excessive rain during that rainy season. Now, poor folks can be excused for building haphazardly on steep hills and valleys, basically worthless land that they've squatted on. They've got to live somewhere, and since the land's worthless, nobody cares. And the rich folks like to build their million-dollar mansions on precarious property that has a fantastic view. In any case, it's the poor guy you feel sorry for. Though I have to admit that some of us expats feel a certain guilty pleasure when a rich guy's house ends up in the river. Dumbasses. So when you see spectacular collapses like that in the news and in the media, don't think by any means that's going to happen to you if you build or buy a place down here. Just don't be an idiot. And you know, wealthy idiots are everywhere. Look at how many houses of the wealthy collapse off their precarious perches every year in the States. You see that in the news all the time too, don't you? But where was I? Oh yeah, I was talking about certain superstitions you find throughout Latin America, and here's a couple more for you. Now, it turns out when a Latin guy or girl first start going together, you know, dating, there's a test that the girl can and usually does perform on the guy, sometimes without him knowing it. You see, she'll try to tickle the guy under his armpits. Say what? Well, Latin rumor has it, the more ticklish a guy is under his armpits, the more jealous he is by nature. In other words, if he doesn't tickle much, then he isn't the jealous type. And if he's very ticklish, he'll be the insanely jealous type. So then you might wonder just how ticklish Latin men really are. I think you know the answer to that one. And here's another superstition that's quite pervasive. Latins think that if their right palm starts itching for any reason, that means they're going to come into some money. And if their left palm starts itching, that means they're going to soon get taken or going to lose money somehow. And here's the final Latin old wives' tale for the day. If a woman's pregnant, the way Latin women think they can tell if it's going to be a boy or a girl, they pull a long hair out of the woman's head, run it hard across the edge of their fingernail, and if it curls up like a curlicue, it's going to be a boy, and if it remains pretty straight, it's going to be a girl. Which, of course, is 100% BS. But they believe it, so let them have their fun and don't be a killjoy. Gringo. But let's change gears now and get a bit more serious. Now, a lot of people wonder, and they send me emails about it too, how much influence the U.S. has in various Latin countries. Well, it's easy to see the U.S. has tons of influence in places like Costa Rica and Panama, where there are gringos everywhere and thus a lot of gringo money. And then there's Colombia too, where the long arm of Uncle Sam, meaning of course you, are supporting that long-lost drug war with plenty of U.S.-backed boots on the ground. In fact, if you're down in any big Colombian city, you might just spot or even run into personally what you might call U.S. auxiliaries or military types. And they're quite unmistakable because, you know, these days, U.S. military and military auxiliary types are so physically fit they all look like no-neck, muscle-bound pro wrestler types, as compared to the regular Colombian troops, who are more on the order of 140-pound, 5-foot-5 welterweight types. I mean, it really is odd. I've seen it myself. A bunch of Dolph Lundgren expendable types, you know, U.S. military or alphabet agency. And if you don't believe it, just go to one of those expat bars in any big Latin American city. You know, the ones I advise you keep away from. And note, if you stick around long enough, you're bound to run into one or two of these guys. And if they speak a little Spanish, it's with a very bad gringo accent. So then, what are all these guys doing down here in Latin America? Who knows? Who wants to know? And though they may not exactly be working directly for the U.S. military, They wouldn't be down in Salvador, Panama, Honduras, or wherever, and of course Colombia, if they weren't hooked up with some kind of U.S. alphabet agency. And you know, the biggest joke of all is this agency called USAID. You might have heard about it. That's USAID, which seems like a benevolent nonprofit agency, when in actuality, all it is a CIA front. In fact, all over Latin America, in any major city, you'll see those USAID signs with a white background in red and blue letters all over the place. Note that in every big Latin city, there'll be a USAID building behind some very fortified walls. In fact, almost all of these USAID buildings take up more than a city block. And note, the letters in USAID stand for United States Agency for International Development. Yeah, right. Which, again, is total BS. It's just a CIA and U.S. alphabet agency front. Come on, you guys. Every long-term expat down here with two neurons firing knows that. And get this, here's their official bogus BS mission. Here's their so-called mission statement. It says, USAID is the United States federal government agency primarily responsible for administering civilian foreign aid. Responding to President Obama's pledge in his January 2013 State of the Union address, he said USAID's purpose is, quote, to join with our allies to eradicate extreme poverty in the next two decades, unquote. And then he says, USAID has adopted as its mission to partner and end extreme poverty and to promote resilient democratic societies while advancing the security and prosperity of the United States. How's that working for you, Obama? And it says here, USAID operates in Africa, Asia, Europe, and Latin America. So just know that however noble you think that mission statement is, it's all BS. Why don't you just park a car in front of the next USAID building you see down here in Latin America and watch all the military types come and go and all the blacked out windowed SUVs zipping in and out of the place with their bodyguards, all with diplomatic and odd looking license plates. Plates that don't appear on your average cars down here in Latin America. That's where all those muscle-brained U.S. auxiliary Dolph Lundgren types hang out. Not to mention, there's always a couple of armed guards at the entrance. Oh, and by the way, if you're ever out and about down here and you end up running into one of these expendable-type guys, they'll never tell you what they're really down here for. Now, I'm not saying USAID does no good at all. They do hand out freebies and care packages when there's an earthquake or there's a hurricane or whatever, but that's just a cover for what they really do. You don't have to believe me. Just go ahead and look it up. Put USAID CIA front in your search box and you'll see what I mean. For example, just check out the USAID building in Guatemala City. It takes up about five city blocks for one thing. And you really can't tell what it looks like because the walls are about 15 feet high. And there's guards and surveillance cameras everywhere. Yeah, right. That's just the kind of setup you need when you're handing out free bags of rice and beans to the poor, right? Oh, and by the way, for all you expat gonna-bes and wannabes that are looking for quick employment opportunities down here in Latin America, you can sell your soul to the devil and work at USAID. I mean it. If you've got certain credentials and no scruples and no shame, you could qualify. They're looking to hire all the time. What I mean by that is all you have to do is come down here to Latin America, to any big city, and pick up one of the big daily newspapers, the one with the thick classified want ads and job sections, and you'll see that USAID is always looking for help. I mean, with buildings often sitting on spaces bigger than city blocks, they have a hell of a lot of people working for them. So they're always looking for administrator types and specialists of one kind or another. I've personally seen them advertise in the paper for psychologists, sociologists, archaeologists, security people, you name it, they advertise for it. And at least half the time those ads are in English. However, they spell out that you have to be bilingual to a certain degree, meaning your Spanish should be at least 60%. So, yes, you can, by Latin standards, get high-paying jobs down here at CIA fronts like USAID, USAID. Not to mention, you could get a job at your own U.S. embassy, the consulate in Latin America. There is a U.S. consulate in every capital city in Latin America, not to mention, a lot of the very large cities that aren't capital cities have consulates too. U.S. consulates are always placing help wanted ads in the local papers. You see them all the time. So that's always an option if you're willing to suck off the U.S. government tit down here. But do note, if you get a job like that with a U.S. consulate, you'll be working with a bunch of brown-nosing, parasitic asswipes. And I do say that with all due respect. You know, it's just a smaller version of government up in the States. And I don't know about you, but that's exactly one of the reasons I left the United States, so I don't have to be around those kind of people. But that's just me. Anyway, just to let you know, you can come down here to Latin America and become part of the problem again by working for the U.S. government. And you know, when you meet people like that who work for the U.S. government down here at parties or events and such, to tell you the truth, they're just cogs in a bloated, collapsing system and they don't even know it. They're in total denial, obviously. You don't want to have discussions with them about government or anything you and I might talk about on this show. And you know, expat Eddie gave me a good analogy once. He said, back in his hometown in Texas, there was a factory that had government contracts to assemble detonators for explosives used by the U.S. military and sold abroad to other foreign militaries. And Eddie said everyone in the county wanted to work at this place because they paid well and had great benefits and a lot of overtime. Of course, more overtime meant more detonators for more explosives for more bombs. But to them, the workers, all it meant was a new pickup truck or a better flat-screen TV. And as Eddie said, no one he ever knew that worked there could connect the dots. They weren't even to the denial stage. They just wanted more overtime. Now, speaking of working for the U.S. government down here in Latin America, here's a story that's going to piss you off. The story that I heard secondhand, and I had to verify myself. I had to actually meet this person so as to make sure it was on the level. So, at the risk of offending all you government employees and ex-government employees up in the States, and irritating everyone else in the process, let me set the stage for you. And this, by the way, is why you absolutely need a plan B, all flow charted out and on standby, before the Obama hits the fan. Okay, down here in a big city in Latin America, I just happened to meet an American guy, an expat, who you just might think is the luckiest guy in the world. But believe me, there are tens if not hundreds of thousands of guys just like him. He started out as a cop in a New England police force, put in his 20 years, got out with a pension of 75 grand a year. Then, still being in his early 40s, bored and still young, he applied for a job as a U.S. Air Marshal. Then, after putting in the requisite amount of time there to get another pension, he walked out of there with another 75 grand government pension on top of the first one. Now he's got 150,000 bucks a year. Then, still being quite young, he applied for a security job at a U.S. consulate overseas down here in Latin America. And he told me, by the way, all he really is a glorified security guard. And he told me on the QT he really only puts in about 4 hours a day, though he's checked in for 8. Typical government slug, huh? And for that, he gets paid about 75 grand a year. And he said when he gets enough time in, he'll get a third government pension for around 80 grand. So what's that work out to in pensions? Close to a quarter of $1 million a year, right? But that's not all. Because his wife's up in the States and doesn't want to come down, he gets another 15 grand a year for her, and he's got 2 kids that don't want to come down, so he gets another 5 grand apiece for them. And get this, he gets a free trip back to the States twice a year. Or the wife and kids can come down and visit twice a year here, on your dime, of course. But that's not all. Down here in Latin America, he gets a $4,000 a month housing allowance. And why that ridiculous amount of money, a king's ransom down here? Well, of course, that's because consulate and embassy employees have to live in a very high rent section of town, a designated area, near Embassy Row, where all the other embassies are located, the British, the French, the German, etc. And that's where all the other embassies force their employees to live too. So here, in these tiny few blocks, you've got a totally artificial, rarefied balloon of a market. Way out of whack compared to the rents in other good parts of the city farther away. They pay $4,000 a month for something that might go for $800 in another part of town. Meaning, all you expats and expat wannabes, you don't want to look for housing anywhere close to what we call Embassy Row. But that's not the point. The point here is, there are untold numbers of ex-U.S. government workers getting tremendous pensions. Multiple pensions. like this guy who I met personally. And when regular, normal Americans who have real jobs, who make real products and provide real services, hear about this kind of stuff, it drives them batty. Not to say that we're all so lofty-minded that we wouldn't dip into that trough ourselves if we had the opportunity. I mean, what are you going to do if you're qualified? Turn it down? I don't think so. And for all you government or ex-government workers out there who say, no, you're wrong, Johnny. What you're talking about is a really fringe, oddball case. It's not normal. Well, for those of you in denial who are thinking like that, I have this for you. My mother sent me this from Illinois, and the title of the article is, Why Illinois is Bankrupt. The article starts by saying, today, 6,000 retired Illinois teachers from the public school system are collecting at least $100,000 a year in pension money. Then it says, after just 20 months of retirement, the average Illinois teacher breaks even with his entire lifetime working contribution amount. It says the average Illinois teacher that stays in the Illinois teaching system for their full career, if they live a normal lifespan, will retire with an average $2 million per teacher payout. And finally, it says, by 2029, if drastic changes are not implemented shortly, the Illinois Teachers Fund will be entirely broke. So anyway, all you folks up there in Minneapolis, Darien, Madison, and Cleveland, if you're in denial about what's happening in your abomination, that's your problem. But you other guys and gals who are clued in, well, you need that plan B. You just can't dial 911 when Hillary hits the fan. You have to have a way out. Which brings us to a very good way to work on that plan B. Just come on down to my January 2015 Expat Wisdom Seminar in Latin America. It gets underway in 2 months. However, it's more than half filled now, so don't wait too long to sign on. Just go to www.expatwisdom.com and click on the Latin seminar link. Like I said, if you haven't got a well-designed plan B when the Hillary hits the fan, just come down to my 6-day boots-on-the-ground seminar and we'll work one out for you. Oh yeah, one last thing about that three-pension government worker. He told me that from his first job, the police job, he gets a $1.2 million cash payout whenever he wants. Makes you just want to scream, doesn't it?
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.